You're listening to Next Stop CPA, the official podcast for the CPA exam, brought to you by the AICPA.
Hey there, listeners. Today's a special episode. Mike and I will both be co-hosting this episode. Usually get one of us or the other. How's it going, Mike?
It's going well. We got a great episode.
We do. So this is a bit of a different episode. So it's always our goal to make sure you have access to the most up-to-date information when it comes to the exam. And we always push people right to the website, which should be your go-to source for that information. And it's where you can find the latest about the exam process, what's tested on the exam, scoring, yada, yada, general news and announcements. It's also where you'll find the blueprints, which outline the content and skills covered on the exam, the sample tests and tutorial, which allow you to test drive the exam before test day. So it's really a wealth of resources, and it's what the AICPA puts out there as the official go-to exam information.
But like heads on our shoulders, everybody's got an opinion about the exam or story, personal insight, and we seem to find that a lot as you and I kind of surf the web, looking for comments, trying to get the latest info on what candidates are thinking, because then that helps us do our job in getting information out there to candidates.
Right. So, you know, we're on the online threads, we're on the discussion forums, just seeing what you guys are saying out there, keeping our finger on the pulse. So today's episode, we are going to include some questions that we've seen you ask each other, and we're going to include responses that you've given to each other. But we do need to note, very importantly, we do need to note that the responses that we'll be sharing from candidates do not necessarily reflect the opinions or recommendations of the AICPA. And in fact, when browsing any discussion forum, please be on alert for misinformation. If you're unsure of a question or the answer provided, it's often best to turn directly to the source for the most accurate information.
And there is a lot of bad information out there sometimes. You and I have seen it. We try to correct it when we can, but, you know, our goal is always really try to keep that good information out there and, you know, do your due diligence. I mean, that's what it comes down to. Just because somebody said something online, it doesn't mean it's right for you or true for that matter.
Exactly. So, you know, whether it be coming to us, the AICPA, for exam content questions, going to NASBA for exam administration questions, or Prometric for exam test center questions, you know, make sure you're going to the source just to confirm whatever you might read online elsewhere. So with that said, you know, let's get started. We're going to just go through some questions that we've seen come up time and again from you guys, from the candidates, and the responses that you're getting from your fellow peers. So first one I'd say, Mike, is probably one that we get the most often. We see this all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what is the best order to take each section?
We hear that constantly on our webcast when people do the Q&A on the Twitter feeds. I'm like, what should I do in the forum? So yeah, that's a common one. Now, personally, what do you think? What do we always tell people?
So we tell people from our perspective of the AICPA, there's no right order. It really varies by individual preference, where you're at. So that's where we stand on it. There is no right order. It's right by each individual.
Right. I mean, you may want to start with something that you consider the easier of the four sections and kind of give yourself that high five boost to kind of go out there with a win from the beginning.
Going confident, yeah.
Yeah, and then you go out there. Others want to say, well, let me tackle that hardest one that I'm not as confident in. So if I fail, I you know, my time clock, that 18-month clock doesn't necessarily start on me right away until I pass the section. But like you said, there's a few here. There's some things that you came across. So what are some things, what are the actual candidates themselves saying?
All right, so here are some responses, basically word for word, that we've picked up over the last few months. So here's one person says, from my experience, I would suggest taking one of two approaches. Either take your hardest part first or start with something you know you can pass. If I had to do it over again, I would have started with FAR. I would have taken FAR, Reg, Aud, BEC. In that order, because FAR is the longest and most difficult on average, I personally think that if you can overcome and pass your weakest area, then you have refined your study strategy to work to what works best for you.
Well, it's definitely not the longest because they're all four-hour sections.
That's a good point. So that's a good point.
Maybe long in their mind because that to them, that person, suffering. Like we said, that's the hardest section to them. And honestly, we do get that a lot. We did, what was it, an informal poll on our website, and we asked, what do you think is the most difficult section? And FAR
far and away
it was considered the most difficult of the sections. But then again, there's some folks that just click with that, with financial accounting and reporting, and they dig that. Then you've got the other issue that we hear with people. You know, I work it mostly in tax. So Clearly, what would you think? Reg is going to be their strongest section. So maybe audit isn't their go-to section. So like you said earlier, it really depends on what person. And somebody else did say here, the recommended order is FAR, AUD.
Because it has accounting concepts in it?
Right. Yeah. Reg, because it has accounting and audit concepts in it. Then BEC, because I'm told, in quotation, it has a bit of all of it in them. So I guess that's a way you could look at it. But once again, comes down to the person.
Somebody else said, I didn't do the hardest first because I needed to get used to the exam first. I did Reg and BEC. Now I'm studying for FAR, then I'll submit AUD.
So they wanted to win.
You need that little confidence boost.
What was the one that they said, oh, look, call me crazy, but I started with BEC because they considered that to be the easiest one. And they referenced that learning curve as well. The fact that you need
the testing environments.
But that just stresses the point that you better do some pre-exam work and research. Get on our sample tests and try them out. Take the software for a test run. I think if you go to Prometric, you might be able to do a test run there. I'm not sure where you can maybe visit a test center. You should check that out. Don't hold me to it.
Definitely worth looking into.
You could visit a test center advanced just to at least see it and get an idea. Okay, this is the realm I'm going into, so that maybe you don't have the nerves on actual testing, although I don't think the nerves are going to go away.
But at least do as much homework as you can beforehand. But it seems like, you know, in looking at all these comments, people have two sort of schools of approach here, is either take the hardest first, get it over with, get your confidence boost, or take the easiest first, or what you perceive to be the easiest first. So it's an either or situation, but it really...
By the way, you have 4 hours of testing in front of
you. Yeah. Yeah.
With a 15 minute break.
Yep. So moving on, and we can get through this one pretty quickly. Another very common question we get is, which section is the hardest? So as Mike said before, we've really seen FAR is the hardest, but this is, again, another one from the AICPA standpoint, that there's objectively no right answer. It really depends on the individual. But with that said, majority seem to think FAR is the hardest, then Reg, BEC, and AUD. And here is what we heard from people.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because I think one time we were doing a webcast and we met some future candidates who just happened to attend. We did an in-person thing. And I think one of the candidates was saying to, or future candidates was saying to me, BEC to me seems the hardest because it's such a general category that it has so many different concepts. So to me, and I kept thinking to myself, but see, we're communications people. So I was like, the writing section, I'll knock that one out
Nail
of the park.
Yep.
You know, that essay or as they call, everybody calls it the essay, but it's the written communication task.
Right.
I always personally thought when we started working here that AUD was going to be the hard one. And I was like, and they're like, no, these people are training mostly to be auditors. So they'll get that.
So it's something they've experienced with from school. Well, somebody said, you know, And to hit on that point of just like what you're studying and what your career path is, someone said, I'm curious how many of them are affected by the job experience. I think FAR is the easiest. Auditing is the hardest. Part of the reason is I have more financial accounting experience. My job requires daily work of entries plus financial statements, et cetera. On the other hand, I don't have any audit experience, so it takes me longer time to figure out the logic and basic knowledge of auditing. So there you have it. It's really based on what your background is, what your strengths are, where your perceived weaknesses are.
And I think that definitely work experience, if you're doing something on the job so regularly, I think that does play into it. In one of our other podcast episodes, we spoke with one of our colleagues, I believe it was our colleague Kevin, who mentioned that there was something he wasn't accustomed to. I think he even said odd. He said because he had something where there was one single course, and you know, he got out of college and he wasn't as familiar with that certain concepts anymore. But there's something to that effect. If you're working in the realm of taxation, that's going to be your strongest. If you're doing financial accounting work, that's which is the nuts and bolts.
And maybe, you know, if you're already at a job and there's other people who you're working with who have gone through the exam process, maybe speak to them about what their best section order was, what worked for them, because maybe they have a similar background to you. And so what worked for them may work for you as well in terms of choosing your order.
Or even study together if you've got other fellow candidates there.
Yes.
If you're not studying together or at least having some semi-regular meetup with fellow candidates in your office, which just a general discussion with each other can help.
And give some great motivation too.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
remember, you're not in it alone.
Support each other. I mean, don't go through it alone. There's no reason. If you've got a colleague who sits two desks away and you're both taking the exam, take it together. I think you spoke with another colleague of ours who said she went through the process with a friend, correct?
Yes, and that helped them get through it. They were calling each other. They were confiding in each other. They were, you know, missing vacations and holidays to study, and they knew what the other was going through. So I think that really helped them get through the process. So on the topic of, you know, putting in all those hours and you know, missing a lot of family and friend time and making those kinds of sacrifices, another very common question that we do get is, how many hours should I study for each section? Now, where do we stand on that, Mike?
Too many hours? No. Actually, it does. Once again, and I hate to keep saying this, but it really does depend on you, the candidate. But the one thing I will say, if you think you're just going to study, you know, 20 hours and you're going to be ready to take the exam, I think you can pretty much guess that you're not going to do as well. You need to put in some hours. And we've seen everything from, what do we say, 6 weeks of really going through the content of a particular section.
Yeah.
Sometimes, depending upon the section, you may need more, but then there's that review period where we're saying, once you've gone through everything, the concepts, the types of tasks that
really
you need
to sink in,
do at least a 1 to 2 week review period. And we've heard weird stories where I read in one of the forums, somebody said, oh yeah, I studied for 3 weeks hardcore before I took my whatever section, and I passed on the first, I got an 82. And I'm like, well, you know,
it's possible. It's just harder to achieve
you, but so, you know, the reality is there's a lot of content that
it varies too. Sorry, Mike. Yeah.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
It varies also, you know, what kind of time you have on your hands. We've heard from people who work full time, and those who are studying full time. We've heard from those who working full time and have kids, or they're planning some kind of big milestone in their life. So it really depends on your life situation and how much time you really can fit. Someone said, I work full time. I try to put in a minimum 15-hour week of studying, 2 hours Monday to Thursday, and then 4 to 5 on Saturday and Sunday. Someone else works full time, said I was putting in almost 4 hours every night and 6 to 7 on the weekends when I didn't have somewhere to be with my kids. And then another person said, you know, they were studying full time, and they were putting in 3 to 4 weeks of studying with 6 to 8 hours of studying per day. So it basically became their full time job.
And I think that this just kind of points to the fact that we say this a lot. You got to set a strategy for yourself of how you're going to go through this and set a plan, you know, with how many hours should I study for each section? Well, okay, I've decided the order I'm going to take it in, and I'm going to study, you know, study X number of hours. I work this many hours a day. I need X number of hours for family time if I have children. You know, whatever it may be. And I think one of the things
per children count too, just putting that out there.
Yeah. And you
spend,
you know,
time with them.
What you need to do is, you know, when you're getting to the sections and trying to figure out how much time do I need to study, things like that, we'll find out about the section. That's why we keep telling people, go check out the blueprints. Just look at them. We even have sectional blueprints that you don't even have to download the full thing. You could just get AUD or BC.
Just the one you need.
Yeah, and go through, look at the concepts, see what's in there, look at the task statements. These are the things that you're going to be asked, that you may be asked to do on that particular section or in that particular section. So familiarize yourself with them. If you feel that you're not as confident on certain things, then you know what you need to study. And with all those other resources that are available to you as a candidate, kind of bring them into the study and get yourself ready. And then you can kind of say, okay, I need this many hours to get through my studies for a particular section.
Exactly. And not to sound like a broken record on this, but, you know, on the topic of the blueprints, we kind of liken it to, you know, imagine you have a destination you have to get to and you don't use GPS. You just kind of like wing it and hope for the best that you'll eventually find it. and get there. But the blueprints to the exam, they're the GPS essentially. They outline all the content that's on the exam, and it really should be a starting point for you. And even if you're one or two sections in and you haven't looked at them yet, take a look at them now. You know, it's never too late to start taking a look at them. They're free. They're right on our website. They're developed by the same team who writes the exam. So you know the information there is accurate. It's relevant. It's up to date. It's updated 1 to 2 times a year. So it's always where it needs to be.
And what's even better is that we have a connection between them and our sample test. So if you are going through a particular section in our sample test, let's say AUD, and the simulations that are in there, we provide you with the correct answer, the correct answer for the simulation, let's say. Right. And with the correct answer, we also provide you with a rationale or an explanation. This is why this answer is this and why this answer is that. But the connection is we show you the blueprint section that particular sample test question relates back to. So you kind of get an idea of how a particular task or concept is presented in an exam question just by taking I forget off the top of my head how many actual questions are on each sample test section, but go check it out. You'll see how things are presented to you. So if we say, look at inventory and do XYZ, well, if that task is in the blueprint, if there's a sample test question that relates, you'll get that connection, which helps make you a better candidate.
Yeah. So moving on, I think we've made it clear that the blueprints are definitely an important part of your of a study plan for
You're
a candidate.
Foolish if you don't look at them.
So moving on, we've seen a lot of people commenting that they've been out of college for, you know, quite a while. They're not just a year or two out, but maybe 10, 15, 20 or more years, and they've forgot everything that they learned. They're wondering if they have to put more time in when it comes to studying.
I would wonder about that. I guess that once again depends on the person,
But don't be discouraged if that is you and you've been out longer and you feel like you know you're starting further back and you have more obstacle ahead of you. Don't be discouraged if you've been out a bit longer. It's definitely still worth it at any stage of your career. In fact, you might have an advantage with that knowledge and experience that you've attained throughout your career that maybe somebody right out of school doesn't quite have yet. So that's, I think, where we stand on it. It's never too soon, never too late to start pursuing the CPA.
Yeah, if you've actually been doing the work that is part of the concepts or knowledge that's tested in a particular section of the exam, that's definitely going to benefit you.
Yeah.
I mean, on the job experience is fantastic. That shouldn't deter you. I mean, what do we say? I think typically we see candidates between the ages of, let's say, 21, 22, and 30 is the average. I think we've heard based on NASBA statistics, but you know, there we met in focus groups. I met a candidate who took it in their 40s. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, one of our colleagues, she was a chemist. And if you listen to the, I believe the BEC episode, she talks about how, I think she lost her job but she had gotten into bookkeeping or something like that.
And Kathy?
Yeah. And yeah. Said, oh, I really dig this. And she went back in her 40s and took this CPA exam and became a licensed CPA, which is a really cool story because, you know, had she not lost her job and just decided to, I enjoy the work of accounting, you know, she would have never entered the profession.
She found a new path. And now she writes the exam. She helps write the exam.
Yeah. Which is even cooler.
Yeah. So, the answers that we've seen you guys give, you know, is kind of what we would expect. 25 to 30 hours a week should be ideal. 8 to 9 weeks for each section. Someone said they were out almost 10 years since their accounting classes, and it took them 6 months of studying part-time to get through all the FAR material, starting part-time and weekends,
wow, yeah,
and then taking 8 weeks to repeat it in a time frame for study that's generally recommended. So, I mean, it sounds like most people who've been out a little bit longer, maybe they're putting in a little bit more time just to freshen up on some of the stuff they might have forgotten. But don't be discouraged if you happen to fall into that that category of being out longer from school. And also, you know, another group we encourage not to be discouraged are working parents with kids, little kids especially. You know, we know how demanding they can be. And mm-hmm. just the question, how did you do it? I mean, just having kids in itself is a job. So we saw the question, how'd you do it? When did you find it the best time to study? And we got some really creative answers here from people. But Mike, do you want to share kind of our stance on it?
Let's see. So, oh gosh, yeah. This person said, I have 3 kids, ages 1, 5, and 10. Oh, my kids are teenagers now. So thankfully I'm past that stage, but I get up at 5 a.m. and get ready for work. So while I'm putting on my makeup, I'll listen to lectures, and while I'm driving to work, I listen to lectures. See, she's maximizing her time.
Oh, yeah. Even in the bathroom, right? She's doing it.
Yeah. I mean, she's listening to, I mean, why not? If it's dead time. I mean, the commute, especially, and we know that's common. We hear that with people listening to study, podcasts and things like that.
Podcasts like Next Stop CPA.
Yeah. But you know, she talks about her reviewing her notes on her lunch break. And then when the kids get into bed around 8, that's when she really digs into new material, and she'll do that for a few hours and really hit the books. And
during the baby's nap time too.
Yeah. I mean, why not take advantage of that? And then what does she say? And then once the week is done, she's on the weekend. She usually hits 2 to 3 hours of studying during the morning, and then hits, like you said, hits the nap time and takes advantage of that. So that's called maximizing your time.
Someone even said that they would look at flashcards when they were at their kids' extracurricular activities. So instead of watching them like play soccer or baseball.
Well, you're supposed to be paying attention.
I mean, I get it. I get the one about the bathroom too. I mean, if you're in there with your little kids, and I have very young kids, and so they have no concept of boundaries. So they just follow me right in. So if you're in there anyway and they're going to be talking to you, just might as well start studying. Maybe they'll get bored and give you some privacy.
But have your 3-year-old read the flashcards to quiz you on auditing concepts.
Right. Teach them to read while they're helping you.
How many blocks do I have here?
This also speaks to, you know, for many of the parents out there who are studying, hopefully you have someone in your life, a reliable spouse or family member who can, you know, take on a little bit more of the load with the kids during that time, and that they're understanding that this is, you know, this is going to pay off long term. So having some kind of support network there around you is definitely also helpful, and, you know, making them aware of it before you get started.
Yeah. That's something we hear frequently. It's not just people going through the exam with you or fellow former candidates. It's your family that you need to be there with you.
Right. Moving on, another question we see often is, for those of you who took and passed all 4 exams in a short period of time, meaning under 9 months, what was your study schedule like? Did you work full time? Did you take extra time off from work to study right before the test? I would like to speed up the study time so I can take the test sooner, but I'm not sure how to go about it.
That's not reality. That's not, or I shouldn't say not reality, but that's not
Carter.
That's not common to the majority of people. I think go longer than 9 months. That's a lot.
I mean, it's doable, but I mean, if you can create a human being in 9 months, you can pass the CPA. But it's a challenge.
I mean,
you know?
I know people do get through. I mean, we've heard that. I mean, our buddy Mike, who works with us, he got through all 4 sections on the first time. But I don't know if he did it in 9 months, but the thing is, 9 months, it's a challenge if you're, but don't think that you have to do that. That's my,
rush yourself.
That doesn't have to be you. You have 18 months to get through with it. Once again, set your plan, map out your journey. But so people, I guess, that did make it through in 9 months, what did some of the folks say here?
So someone said, I passed in 9 months, but it was brutal. I was working full time, 10 hours a day, had some big family situations going on. It was miserable, but it's over now. I had to get creative to get that time in. I would go to work like 2 hours early and study. There were less distractions there than at home since no one was at work yet. He listened to audio notes on the drive there. Throughout the day, he took different review course mini quizzes on his phone. He listened to more audio notes on the way home, and he tried to squeeze in an hour or two at night, reading a lot of flashcards right before bed. And on the weekends, this is dedication, he would wake up early and hit 3 or 4 hours a day before life would take over and he was required to do other things. And he says he scheduled every test for a Monday, so he would then take off Friday before he would test, and he would have the whole weekend to spend 3 full days cramming. So he said, you can do it, but be prepared for the commitment and also be ready to get creative to fill little gaps of time with quality study opportunities.
Yeah, that's power studying. I don't think I did that in college.
I had a few all-nighters, but I was 20. Nowadays, yeah, I don't know how old our average tester is. I mean, they're younger, but that's rough. That's rough.
Hey, if it works for you, more power to you. Just go through it. And once again, leading back, it's all about you and what your life is like, what your work schedule is like, what your family situation is, your learning abilities, how well you learn, how you learn.
Exactly.
It really depends on you.
Yeah. So figure out what your style is. Another question we get, which there's a very straightforward answer to this, so not really too much user response that we're going to share, but can you skip questions and go back to answer them during the testlets? So short answer, yes, you have 5 testlets, so you can skip questions within the testlets and go back to them. But once you submit the testlet, you cannot go back.
Yeah, you're on your own after that. You just you've said your piece and you move on.
Then it's official, and you can even bookmark them. You can bookmark the questions when you're within that testlet, so you know exactly which question you skipped. Just so you, right. You don't want to submit a testlet having skipped some questions.
Yeah, you're right. That's a big thing for people. I guess maybe it's me, how I used to order on tests. Like when I went through the SAT, I was like knocking it out question by question. I felt weird going back.
Oh yeah.
I was one of those people that just had to go through, knock it out, and say, that's my answer.
Better. I knew when I was unprepared. I would be like, okay, I'm going to come back to this one. Next one. Okay, I'm going to skip this one too. I'll go to the next one. And then before I knew it, I had skipped 5 or 6 and be like, all right, this strategy is not working. So another question is, does anyone know if any of the AICPA questions are on the actual exam? And I think we're pretty good people to field that question since we do work for the AICPA. You want to cover this answer, Mike?
So they're saying, are any of the question, which questions?
I think they mean the sample test questions.
Oh, will they appear on the exam?
So I think they meant, do any of the AICPA sample test questions appear on the actual exam?
Sure. We like to give you all the answers in advance. No. No. The sample test questions that you see for each section are really meant just to prepare you. Number one, to prepare you for the use of the software, all the buttons and tools and functionality, how you navigate through testlet to testlet, how you enter your candidate ID, breaks and things like that, everything you need to know, but also familiarizing yourself. This is how a simulation is formatted on the exam. This is how you answer simulations. This is how an MCQ appears. This is how the written communication task will appear. Now, these are legit questions. They're retired questions that may have been on exams.
Many, but not all. Yeah.
Many, but not all. Retired. Or they were created specifically for the sample test to convey the concept that is tested. And that's where I guess you could say there is a relation. These are concepts that may be tested on the exam. While it's not the exact problem, word for word, the general concepts are there. And that's why it's important to look at the blueprints. But unfortunately, we're not going to give you the answer. We're not going to give
question. My father-in-law is a CPA, and he's like, where were you when I was testing for this? I was like, I wouldn't have been able to help you. And just a note about the sample test, we have another episode that's up right now about what the difference is between the sample test and a practice test, because we've seen comments of people saying the sample test only had, you know, a few questions. Did I miss something? It's not a full, like Mike said, it's not a full test. That's what a practice test is. A sample test is just that. It's a sample. It's not the full meal. You know, you're just getting a taste of what to expect, but not a full testing experience.
Right. And that's what we say. Our resources are meant to complement everything else, whether review course providers, items, or study guides you may pick up in Barnes & Noble or online, what have you.
Yeah. So here's just kind of like a little motivational comment that we saw from one person. They said, I'm listening to a podcast featuring a couple people who assist in writing the exams. Spoiler alert, they're referring to our podcast.
Yes.
And they said, neither of them passed all 4 on their first try. Neither of them did. One of them said three of the four he had to take at least twice. These are people who write the exam, so keep in mind your attempts and fails, keep it all in perspective. So for us, you know, that just goes to show that even those of you who would think you'd pass all four parts on the first attempt, and you may not, you know, stick with it, you know, because you can get through it.
Right. And, you know, our goal, Lauren and I, we really want this podcast to be useful, where we talk about things and talk to people about things that are of interest to you, that will help you, that it will kind of alleviate your fears and things like that. So really, number one, subscribe. If you're just listening to us, subscribe. Yep. So you know when new episodes come up. But also share us. Let people know that you're listening to our podcast. We want to be number one.
Slowly but surely we'll get there. But yeah, I mean, we work with the team who writes the exam. So we're working with them every day. We're hearing what's going on with the exam. We know what resources they're coming up with to help you get through it. So we really want to be here for you and be as transparent as possible about what's available for you. So another one is, someone said, my first exam's coming up in a few weeks. I'm contemplating requesting the pencil and paper over the whiteboard. Based on your experience, which did you prefer and why?
Well, if I was a lefty, I wouldn't want the whiteboard. Oh, you're right. I forgot.
Fun fact, Mike and I are both left-handed.
We're both left-handed. I was the kid that always had that black mark always on the side of my left hand because I...
The curse. But I mean, our answer to that is you can request a pencil and paper. You can request it at candidatecare@nasba.org, but make sure you request it at least 2 weeks before your exam date.
Yeah, don't think you're just going to walk in there and make some.
The Prometric person will probably look at you like that.
And that goes generally for any kind of special accommodations, right, whatever they may be. It's not something you could just walk in and say, hey, I'd like this.
Yeah. You'll be looked at probably with a blank stare from the Prometric person. So majority of people said that they prefer the pencil and paper. And actually someone said, if you're left-handed, the dry erase markers are not your friend. So I can definitely relate to that.
Even my own whiteboard in my office is smeared because I write things.
When this might be dating myself a bit, but there was a Simpsons episode. I don't know if we have any fans there, but Ned Flanders, the Simpsons neighbor, he's left-handed. He opened the Leftorium or something like that, a whole store dedicated to left-handed people and products for left-handed people. Anyway, digressing here. So as we're wrapping up, just wanted to leave you on a very positive note. We recently saw a very motivational post from someone who had recently passed all four sections. So Mike, you want to start us off on this one?
Why don't you could talk to, you could take this one.
All right. So they say, I passed my last CPA exam section with several exclamation points. Time for some tips and advice for what it's worth. Number one, ask yourself what is motivating you to earn your CPA. You may find that the right motivation will help get you to where you want to be. For me, my motivation was supporting my wife and baby boy, who I hope will look up to me someday. Number two, don't take shortcuts. There are those with the will to win and those with the will to prepare to win. Prepare to win. I studied at least 2.5 months and over 150 hours for each exam section. This may sound excessive to some, but that was what I needed to do to ensure I passed. Number three, and this is something we reinforce as well, find a support system you can rely on. For me, my wife was phenomenal. She was able to watch our son most of the time while I studied for the first 7+ months of his life. That's a lot to ask for without much help from me. Number four, and again, the AICPA does not promote or endorse any review courses, but we certainly understand that they can be of value. This person says, the review course you choose matters. The one I used was great, but it may not be best for everyone. So spend time researching what fits you best and stick with it. Since I was working full time, I needed the bite-sized lessons so I can fit studying into my schedule. Number five, don't forget to treat yourself on occasion. This brings me to a Parks and Rec reference, which I'm sure some people will get. He says, I don't think I did this enough and I almost burnt myself out. It's important to make sure you find time for you, even for just 5 minutes a day. The days will keep coming and going and you can find 5 minutes for yourself, whether that's reading a book, watching a YouTube video, running, or whatever, you know, you want to spend your time doing. And he says, to those that found out you passed, congratulations. To those that are still grinding, you've got this. Never give up on yourself because you are worth it. That's a nice message.
does this guy work for us? Because it sounds like everything we want to say to people.
Yeah. So, I mean, what we're saying, I think, is what a lot of you guys are saying to each other out there. And it's really nice to see that kind of support that you give to each other. I think it's really important. It's a tough exam. It's a tough process. And it's important to know that you're not going through it alone.
True.
So I think that's all we've got for this episode. Mike, our first one together, certainly not our last.
Maybe we'll have others.
Maybe. Well, thank you for listening, guys, and until our next episode.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Next Stop CPA. Got an idea for an upcoming episode topic, or just want to let us know what you think of the podcast? Share your thoughts with us at nextstopcpa@aicpa-cima.com. And don't forget to visit aicpa.org/CPA exam for the latest exam info.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.